Kathleen Fraser said, lust as the first virtue.
Lust is the first virtue of poetry. Without lust, there is no poetry. She said this as a very young woman at the time that George Appen was saying, you've got too many guys you're interested in your poetry. And I think she recognized early on the phenomena that I explore in my poetry, that, you know, lust, high sexual loves, high sexed energy, creates a different relationship to language, gives it wings, inspires it. And I argue in my book that very early on, she discovers actually a projected love in libidinized field poetics. Then she encounters the feminist critique, which I shared for a few decades, that as a woman, you really need to be querulous and a little suspect of your own erotic inclinations, because they were so much written within a patriarchal heterosexual regime. And then I argue that she finds her way back to a projective love, which does not inscribe patriarchal heterosexual regimes. But it took her a while to get back there.
She had to navigate the quote-unquote compulsory heterosexuality of the time.
Yeah.
So, which is, of course, an allusion to an essay. What was it, Adrienne Rich?
Yeah.
And another very interesting point, which comes up a couple of times in the book, is that she, and not each time was it associated with her, I don't think, but eschewing identity politics. Mm-hmm. And one might add, eschewing identity poetics.
Mm-hmm. Right. And
that's a dangerous thing to do right now, isn't it?
Well, it's always been dangerous, and it's a more, I think, vicious terrain of people really cutting each other off at the knees right now. And I'm not going to mention names because I don't want people to come and cut me off at the knees.
You like your knees.
But at the time, and we're talking about the 70s, and this is also true of, I think, Nathaniel Mackie, that identity politics born from the 1960s, which was a liberationist ethos, then you get this replaced with identity politics. And the identity politics were important. They were noting the ways that if one was a woman or African American or Chicano or gay or whatever, that these positionalities were not recognized, were oftentimes put down, etc. But I think, and I was always against identity politics in poetry. I had a love-hate relationship with Adrienne Rich because I felt she was announcing really important things. She was saying things that were needed to be said. And then I'd go to her poetry, and it had none of the mobility or the catch that, say, other poets had for me. It was so declarative. And I think Kathleen Fraser and Susan Howe, Leslie Scalapino, Lynn Hagenian, the whole school of poets that started building their careers in the 70s and 80s, simply felt they did not want that restriction. If feminism meant anything to them, it meant more space to be, more things to do, more experiences to have. And to have that suddenly constrained by, I am a woman, first and foremost, and that's the most important thing about me, it was just a form of restriction.
A closing of the field.
Yeah, a closing of the field.
Yeah. I love this Robert Duncan quote, and you see that I have it marked right to here, so I don't have to work for it, but he said, and this is, we're talking about The Ambassador from Venus, a biography that Lisa Jarno did on Duncan, on page 328, going to the next page, I would have questions about any of the new minority movements simply because it seems to me that the whole issue of our time is that we barely hold on to writing as human beings, which is the hardest thing of all to do. To write as a woman, or to write as a man, or to write as a black, or to write as a gay poet is absolutely minor compared with how do we hold this new human conscience.
Yeah, that's really great. And I think that does suggest a lot about the field. I might not either or it so much as he just did myself, but I like very much the sense of what the recognition of the homosexual within society that he insisted on as early 1944 does, it changes the terrain, it changes the field. And if you want to move into the new human, which he does, and it now includes all these other people as equal agents, the whole field is changing. So to insist that I'm going to stick with my experiences that tell me I'm a woman for better and for worse, that the field itself has become restricted and stabilized. Mm-hmm. So I would argue it's slightly different than he, but I think you can find a lot of quotations in Duncan that also lend itself to something I would say is a little more post-human. That's like, for me, that's a little too humanistic, because partly because I think we're living at a time where we're really not able to dwell in the space of the human with quite the same confidence as maybe he is dwelling.
And the fact that he was a man,
yeah,
and reading in a living in a masculine time, and the fact that he was white, mm-hmm, opened doors for him. The fact that you know, you're of European heritage and I am, to a certain extent, with a name like Paul Nelson, I don't get credit for my Cuban mother, you know. So it's a very interesting dynamic and loaded, mm-hmm, kind of situation to get, mm-hmm, into. So probably not posting about this on Facebook in the very near future.
Yeah.
Mackie on Writing as a Black Man, things that would have had him lynched in an earlier era.
Uh-huh.
And yet now we look at his writing, it's the sauciest of almost anything in the book. I mean, man, you get a sense that he really likes sex when you read his poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So putting him in the book was a natural thing to do.
Yeah. Well, when I got to the Contemporary Times, there were two others that I would have liked to include if the book was longer and I had more time. Would have been Susan Howe and Harriet Mullen, and it would have been very interesting to put Harriet Mullen in with Nate Mackie, because as I've argued elsewhere, I believe, as a graduate student of the UC Santa Cruz program where he taught, I feel that she picked up a lot from him. She also picked up stuff from other people she worked with. But I chose Nathaniel Mackie, sort of wondering which of the poets to choose, because he fit the book that he was intensely a sexual love poet, that this was a preoccupation with which he started out, with which he continued, that his lyrics have as much intensity, sexuality, but also love as a poet such as Catullus or Keats. Reminds me sometimes of Keats a little bit. And that it continued. So where I was going Harriet or Nate, because I just really didn't want to write too much more, and I had this extensive exploration, and Harriet Mullen would have also made for a very good chapter, except that she sort of drops Eros after Muse and Drudge. And it seemed to me that I was looking for poets that really you could call later day Keats, later day Shakespeare's, later day Sappho's, etc. But they were writing in this different idiom. So that he fit that. So he was hot.
And loaded with the duende, mm-hmm, which you say is enmeshed in Eros.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to elaborate on
that? Well, duende is a concept that Nate Mackie picks up and engages. And he picks it up from Garcia Lorca. Garcia Lorca, who was gay, who was very influential also to Robert Duncan. Duende is a sense of a writing that, or a singing rather, because that's where it comes from, that exceeds technical perfection. So that the emotion, the sublimity, whether of intense sexual love or intense disappointment or angst, whatever the fueling emotion, in some way enters the song in ways that a song that would be too concerned with technical perfection might not allow. So Duende is connected with the blues, connected with a sorrowful singing, At one point, it's as if the arrow pierces the heart, is one of the metaphors that either Nate quotes or devises. I can't remember. And you might say in African-American music, the kind of continuum from the blues and jazz, I suggest that jazz is an idiom that is projective and open field, partly through Nate's own writing, linking these together, but that it's also built of sexual love rhythms. If you simply look at the number of titles, you listen to the music, it has a lot of duende.
Or how the word came up, because yeah. I understand that it's riffing off the word jizz.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and of course, rock and roll, too, you know, is describing a sexual act. So,
yeah. Oh,
so there's very much sex.
Well, I'm newly informed.
Well, that's... I couldn't vouch for that 100%, okay. But I've heard that. Mm-hmm. Duende, also, one has to realize there's always the presence of death when Duende is present.
Right.
And when we think of death and sex, we think of le petit mort, right?
Right,
so,
yeah.
The little death.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been at it for a little over an hour,
yeah.
So I'm feeling that we should probably go to maybe one last thought. Poets writing this way, you say, experience an anthropological change. Or, Ann Carson, you quote her as saying, Eros can teach you the real nature of what is inside you.
Mm-hmm.
This is gets to the transformative
mm-hmm.
aspect. Or, well, this is transmutation, but
mm-hmm.
there's a transformative
mm-hmm.
thing that we're talking about. This transforms the people
mm-hmm.
when they begin to engage the subject in this way, in an open way
mm-hmm.
in which there's some discovery happening as they're writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great place to end. And a little bit of the anthropological change comes from Agamben, where he is writing about the fact that poetry, he says, is important because the engagement of language as a medium, again, going back to your wonderful quotation early on with Duncan of not using but the language, working through you, creates an anthropological change, because then one no longer relates to language as a thing. So one is literally inhabited differently. And so that's, so the transmutation is as a writer. For those of people who are not writers, the fact that love is transformative is all over. I mean, it's in song lyrics, but it's in the expression, the excitement of an undergraduate in their journal. You know, I'm in love. I can't get this person out of my mind. That's the transformation. But the transmutation is for the writer who then finds out how to approach or engage language through that excitement, through that indwelling of another person. End of story.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been outstanding.
Thank you.
I wish you much success with the book.
Thank you.